I know.
Call this meeting back to order. Want to start off by apologizing. We were detained over at the governor's office. We did see the picture of the governor's new granddaughter. Her name is Audrey. She's adorable. The governor was not able to meet with us. She had this other priority, but we did meet with her chief of staff, Marty Loesch, and Bob Nichols. We had a very good conversation with those two. So now we're back. Item 13 is wildlife conflict rules. This is a rule briefing and a public hearing, and we have Dave Ware, our game division manager, here to walk us through this presentation. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioners, again, for the record, my name is Dave Ware. I'm the game division manager for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And so this afternoon, we're going to talk about wildlife conflict rules. Just kind of as an overview, we've got several modifications of existing rules that we'll be doing, one to the definitions section of this chapter, another to the section that deals with killing wildlife causing damage, payment for crop damage, payment for livestock damage, and dispute resolution. In addition, we've got two new rules that we're proposing, both associated with payments for non-commercial livestock losses. So the purpose of the rule amendments that we're proposing is to mainly to bring them into consistency with the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan. There are a few other cleanups and things that every time we open up the rules, we try to address, and so we are doing some of that as well. As you might recall, back in 2009, the legislature modified the statutes associated with wildlife conflict, and the biggest change that came out of that was giving greater authority to the Fish and Wildlife Commission to adopt and set some of the rules and regulations for managing conflicts. So in 2010, we created this whole chapter with you. And then, of course, in 2011, we adopted the Wolf Plan, and here we are 11 months later, and we're updating those rules to bring them into concert with the plan. And so, again, these recommendations will address compensation for non-commercial livestock operators. It also expands the types of domestic animals that would be covered under for compensation. It also encourages producers to enter into agreements to cover losses that go beyond confirmed losses. We've been working pretty closely with several organizations in developing the proposals, and as a result, you noticed that we didn't receive a lot of written comments. However, there will be at least one floor change today based on some of the comments that we got kind of late after the period had closed. So the first thing is WAC 232-36030. It's definitions, and so we've created a definition for livestock beyond commercial. Essentially what it does is adds goats, swine, donkeys, mules, llamas, and alpacas to the definition for non-commercial livestock, but also adds guard dogs, which includes herding dogs. The next one, 051, the changes there really just clarifies that big game animals may be killed when attacking livestock or pets to protect property, regardless of whether the property is used for commercial purposes. This was a clarification. Initially, this language was already in this WAC, but it was in a subsection that was related strictly to commercial livestock. In the case of wolves, an owner would still need a permit from the department because they're classified as endangered. There is a change to 232-36100, and really this is just a clarification that if a landowner refuses fencing offered by the department for crop damage, their claim can be denied. And actually there was a case that came up that was at least unclear to the producer, and so we're clarifying that.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Perry.
Before you get too far, Dave, on page, I don't know whether your pages are numbered the same as ours, but on page six at the bottom, item that's labeled E, it says landowners are encouraged to allow general season hunters during established hunting seasons. Is that word encouraged, is that new?
No, that's, that, the only change to that subsection or sub-subsection was just the lettering, the numbering scheme.
Okay. So that, so a landowner who did not allow hunting would still be eligible for, I was thinking crop damage, not...
In terms of crop damage, there are other rules that are not necessarily open for amendment right now that do stipulate that if it's for the purpose of crop damage, that a landowner would need to have their property accessible unless, unless there were conditions that didn't make sense for opening it up.
That's good, thank you.
So in terms of payment for commercial crop damage, 236,200, the amendment just is that we're proposing would just encourage producers to get into agreements with the department so that they can be compensated for losses consistent with their agreement and outside of the, in the case of wolves, outside of the confirmed and probable classifications. Now, this, the new rule for non-commercial livestock damage, this rule really facilitates most of the changes in the that would bring us into consistency with the wolf management plan. It allows payment to producers regardless of their commercial status. It covers all of the additional species that were identified in the plan. And again, encourages producers to get into agreements with the department to cover losses beyond those that can be confirmed. In terms of payment, we'd like to offer one floor change on page 15. We're suggesting that you strike the word mule from the last sentence where it's where there's a $500 limitation is stipulated, and then add the word mule after horse where the $1,500 limitation is stipulated. And I've been accused of not knowing one end from the other at times, and I think that's the case in here, is really didn't have a good understanding of the current values for mules. And so we are recommending, we got that comment several times, and we are recommending that we make that change. So the new sentence would read, the department's authorized to pay for the replacement cost of the animal up to $200 for sheep or goat, $500 per swine or donkey, and $1,500 per head of cattle, per horse, mule, llama, alpaca, or guard dog, and no more than $10,000 to the livestock owner per claim. This next rule and is again a new rule. It's to address payment and application for non-commercial damage, and it's consistent with the criteria for commercial losses. In addition, it stipulates how the values for those losses will be compensated. This was our first year at trying to enact this payment for livestock damages, and we ran into quite a few challenges in terms of how to get that done correctly. And so we've been working with the Washington Cattlemen's Association and the Farm Bureau, and have come up with a very specific or much more specific way to provide that compensation that I think is going to be fair to everybody. It does, in addition, it prioritizes payments to producers who are under agreements with the department. And it also allows payment of claims to cross biennial lines. So if a claim comes in May and we're out of money for that fiscal year, it would allow us to pay that claim the following fiscal year, the following biennium. And the last one that we're recommending for amendment is 232-36-400. This recommendation creates a livestock appeals committee in addition to other dispute resolutions that a producer might choose to help settle if they don't agree with the offer from the department. Other changes in this section are intended mainly for clarification and just to ensure that the standards in this rule are consistent with the APA. And so there have been a few edits in there for that purpose. Take any questions.
Questions? Commissioner Schmidt?
Dave, I need you to help me think through 232-36-051 on page 5. That's the killing of wildlife causing private property damage. And the change in triple I is striking or pets, and that's dealing with damaging commercial crops or livestock. But then you reinsert the pet protection on page 6, where you can take one animal and be killed during the physical act of attacking the livestock or pets. And what's the difference, and why did you strike it in one place, pick it up again?
Our attorney's helping with this one. And so the issue was that under subsection 1 deals with commercial crops and commercial livestock. Pets don't qualify as commercial livestock under the definitions. However, under subsection 2, that's just dealing with wildlife causing damage to any private property. And so pets are considered private property. So that's the section that logically goes under.
Did we... In existing law, we had pets before. I recall in Spokane making this argument about protecting pets at the time. Apparently, it already was in the statute or in the WAC.
It was in the WAC. I think the discussion at that time had to do with the wolf plan.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Commissioner Jennings?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've been warned I have to keep my questions short. On the penalty of some sort of beating or something.
There's only an 8-1 vote.
Guard dog on page 2 means dogs trained for the purpose of protecting livestock. And so a question I had was, what constitutes trained? Just how do we actually interpret? Is my generic pound dog that I have had for 3 years trained to protect livestock? Or
right. So we ran into the same issue with the public safety cougar removals, the regulation there. And so what we ended up doing there, and we'll probably end up needing to do here as well, is all we can really do is ask the claimant to sign an affidavit saying that dog is trained and used for those purposes. So it's basically an affidavit that the claimant would sign.
Great. Second is just a comment. If you hadn't made the floor amendment for Mule, I would have been doing that. I've heard from several of my friends that have mules that pointed out exactly what the written comments we received as far as these are valuable animals and
same
with donkeys.
Strictly an omission.
And then my last question, and it seems like you covered it, on page 21, we struck that claims will not be carried from one biennium to the next. But evidently, we can do that even though if we're using state funds, it would be... we would just be using the next biennium's appropriation to deal with last year's claim.
Right,
and so that's appropriate.
This was a concern that was expressed by the Farm Bureau, and I think they made that clear a couple of different times in front of the commission. And so the issue is, and I asked the question several times, and at this point, it's still not totally clear whether you can use funds for that purpose. But I told them that regardless of whether it was in WAC or not, we would still have to pursue that with the Attorney General's office and others. And at the same time, we are looking to make a change to the statutes that we'll be proposing in January that would make that moot anyway.
And if we're using non-state funds from grants or whatever, then that would certainly be able to not recognize.
Exactly.
And my last question is on page 23, the Livestock Appeals Committee. It says review and recommend a settlement. Who is that recommendation to? The director?
To the department, yes.
The department, and that's a non-binding recommendation.
Correct.
Thank you.
Commissioner Perry?
Yeah, I just had, well, I have a whole bunch, but in the matter of time, I'll forego a lot of those. I did want to ask a question about it, and again, I don't know whether you have the same information we do, but on page 31, item number 5, livestock producers often have an impact from wolves that are, don't involve the loss of livestock, killing of livestock, lower conception rates, lower rates of gain, not complete pasture use, higher labor costs, other things that, that might be caused by wolves in the area. And this seems to refer this this item, I think this is in the kind of the checklist that you do for various items, but some kind of compensation for that has been discussed or at least brought up a couple of times. What's happened to that? Is that on the agenda or on the horizon at all, that there may be compensation for those kinds of losses as well?
Yes. Trying to keep my answer short as well. So, so this, the page 31 is part of the small business impact statement. And so, because these rules assist landowners at avoiding costs, the effect of the rules is beneficial to a property owner. And so, that's the language there. But within the rule, two different rules that we're proposing, the recommendation is, or the encouragement is for a property owner, livestock operator, to get into an agreement with the state. If they do that, then we would look at compensation beyond confirmed and probable mortalities that are discovered in the field.
I see.
Including all those things you mentioned.
Is it possible that the commission could get a copy of that agreement with landowners? I've heard a lot of references to it, but I've never actually seen it, and I'd like to take a look at it.
You bet. It's just being, I mean, I changed it again yesterday. I was at the Washington Cattlemen's Association meeting, annual meeting yesterday, and we've changed it a little more. So we're trying to be very adaptive, but I can share with you the current copy.
Thank you. I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to compliment you for going to that meeting. I think that's a good way to establish a relationship, a positive relationship between the cattlemen and the department. And I think it's often beneficial for them, for you to go there, have them ask you questions and get factual answers rather than how it's been in the past. So I do compliment you for going to that meeting.
Thank you.
Other questions? Commissioner Koenig?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Page 13, item 5, I just want to understand that the owner would be providing to the WDFW a checklist of the preventive and non-lethal means that have been employed. Has there been talk or has there been thoughts of if they don't do that, but there's field staff that are working with them, does it all come down to the checklist that they've made a check in a box, or is there a little more, another process that might be involved?
We are trying very hard to work with cooperators in terms of how we would provide assistance and even these cost share agreements and things like that. But in terms of filing an actual claim, the statute says that they have to have used preventative measures prior to receiving compensation, and so we need some kind of documentation that they did that. And so we created what we had hoped would be a user-friendly checklist for them to utilize. And I think in terms of compensation, probably the scrutiny that's being paid attention to non-lethal measures that were have been used by a cooperator is probably a little less than the potential for using lethal means or measures to address wolf-livestock conflicts. And so we are working with the environmental community as well as the livestock community to try to come to agreement on what kinds of things are important to demonstrate in terms of the checklist. And so we are getting there. I think we're getting at what you're talking about. We are developing another checklist that perhaps an agency staffer would utilize to verify what a livestock producer was using that maybe would be a little easier for some of the folks that really didn't want to be in agreement with the department and didn't want to
deal with.
Right. So even if they haven't signed an agreement, there's another avenue that they could possibly take that you're working on to where, of course, compensation would be available whether they sign the agreement or not. It's just the level of compensation.
Right.
And or not necessarily enter into an agreement, but still have the capacity to say, this is what we did. It's verified in the field by staff, and they can move forward.
Right. Those are some of the things we're looking at.
Okay.
Other questions? Commissioner Perry?
Yeah, I just wanted to emphasize on this checklist, and I hope, Dave, that it's sort of open-ended, that, yeah, there's a bunch of boxes to check with items on there, but I think as the program goes along, the ranchers as a community are pretty innovative sometimes, and they may come up with other things that would work well, and I hope that list can be added to easily.
You bet. There's an other box that they can check in every subset of the categories, as well as there's one box at the end that says other means.
Excellent.
Okay. All right. I think there's some sense of urgency here to get to adjournment, but we do have a couple people who've signed up for public input. Thank you, Dave. Great job. Very efficient. First person is Daryl Wallace. To go through the commission rules real briefly, each citizen is given 3 minutes. Speak about 4 or 5 inches from the mic. When you hear the beeping noise, that means your time is up. Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. My name is Daryl Wallace. I'm the executive director of the Backcountry Horsemen of Washington. It's an organization of about 3,000 members who can document over 50,000 hours of volunteer labor each year, primarily trail work and the like, but also education. And we've cooperated with the department a good bit in the past, and I'm happy to say we'll be continuing to do so. I want to commend Dave Ware for already picking up on our big issue here, and I apologize for my appearance. I interrupted my annual elk hunting trip to come up here because so many of our members were so excited about the provision about the mules. But you've already dealt with that, so I just wanted to thank you for your interest and concern in that. I hope that you will approve that change. Now, there's, of course, mixed feeling among horsemen with regard to, you know, reintroduction of wolves, but we're very much supportive of the idea of compensation for non-commercial and commercial livestock losses that may occur. And I was happy to hear the tone of the conversations here. I think you folks are doing real well for us. So unless you have any questions for me, I'll drop out of here.
We have no objection to hunting a tire, so we don't mind it at all. Commissioner Dugan?
No, I just have one good question, too. When I get ready to try to buy another good mountain mule for $1,500, I'm going to make Dave ride it for me.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Perry.
Yeah, the comment on mules had already been done, so I didn't do it. But we've used mules. We don't right now, but we use mules quite a bit for hunting, and both riding and packing. They are excellent animals. If you can find a really good mule for $1,500, you better buy it, because normally they're a whole lot more than that.
Okay, thank you.
Very much. Thank you.
Linda Saunders, please come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioners, for getting to speak with you today. My name is Linda Saunders, Director of Conservation at Wolf Haven International, and today I'm actually speaking on behalf of a Washington Wolf Coalition, and I'm going to pretty much read through their comments for this. We commend the Department for approaching the issue of wildlife conflict through the rulemaking process and creating incentives for better animal husbandry that incorporate non-lethal methods to reduce conflicts with wolves. We have the following concerns about the current proposed rules. First, there was not an opportunity to fully comment and submit peer-reviewed science concerning the issue of weight loss correlated to the presence of wolves. Accordingly, the public comment period should be reopened for an additional 30 days and the Commission's vote on these rules similarly postponed. Second, it's important to remember that wolves are listed as an endangered species in Washington, not a big game species. Although they are currently managed under the Game Division, conflict management should be consistent with endangered species priorities. Third, wolf management should be consistent with the Washington Wolf Conservation and Management Plan. Any changes to wolf control methods should be subject to public notice, comment, and to environmental analysis. Agreements with producers should be consistent with the plan as well. Fourth, all wolf management decisions should be based on the best available science. While rancher experience may be considered as evidence, according to existing research, there's no confirmed correlation between wolves and weight loss. How will the department distinguish stress from wolves from stress from coyotes, bear, cougar, poor forage, drought, disease, or poor management? Fifth, the rule as proposed fails to provide the public with an accurate picture of the potential economic impact of this change in the compensation scheme. The state's limited resources should be dedicated first to compensation for verified predation as per the Wolf Plan. The compensation system must be considered not only from the view of compensating producers, but also from the legal requirement of recovering an endangered species. Speculative claims for weight loss will deplete these resources and either jeopardize the compensation for producers with valid claims and or undermine the public support for wolf recovery with inflated damage estimates. We urge the department to engage in new rulemaking that addresses wolf management as an endangered species. Rulemaking should be consistent with the Washington Wolf Conservation Management Plan and ensure full public participation in this important process. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, that concludes the hearing on this subject. Commissioner Jennings?
Can I ask Dave Ware to step back up?
Sure.
So where in the WAC we just reviewed is the weight loss portion of that? Because when I read through it, it didn't jump out at me.
Yeah, that, the details of that are not in there. What it says is that we're encouraging producers to get into agreements with the state, and if they do, that we would compensate consistent with those agreements. And so it's not spelled out in terms of how we would compensate for weight loss. And honestly, at this point, we've not developed a way to do that. We're working with the producer organizations to try to develop how we specifically would compensate for that, but haven't done so at this point.
Okay, because when I read it, it's not in the rules. It's not really, I didn't flag that because I hadn't read between the lines. So thank you.
Okay, a couple. Director Anderson, do you want to speak to that?
Quickly, the underlined language that would allow the flexibility for this if certain terms and conditions were met and if whatever the evidence, documentation, and all that, you can see that it says which may extend beyond the limitations
what,
of
what
this.
Page, you want?
Page 12. So, I mean, I don't mean to read it to you, but the idea is we would enter into these written agreements with livestock operators. They would be compensated consistent with the agreement, and that agreement, the compensation may extend beyond what's specified in this rule. So it gives us the flexibility to look at those factors. It doesn't prescribe or require us to do that. So to, but that's, and so the these livestock operator agreements that we've been looking at and working with operators on does have hold out the potential for compensation for things like weight loss, but there's again the documentation to ensure that we've documented to ensure that it's we can document that the not only the weight loss but that it was caused by wolf activities in the area and all of that are the details that Dave's speaking to that haven't been defined yet or prescribed yet.
Thank you.
I would add one more thing, and that there is language in the Wolf Plan that says that we would consider these other kinds of factors of economic loss for producers as well. It just doesn't, the plan doesn't spell that out, but there is, I can find that for you and get you the page number for that.
Commissioner Perry?
Yeah, just a real short question. You said you'd work with some of the organizations. You mentioned the cattlemen and so forth. Have you had contact with the cattle producers of Washington? That's probably the second biggest cattlemen's organization.
Right. We've been, we've got a quasi-stakeholders group that's really just a list of folks that have been most involved with Wolf Plan and Wolf Plan issues that does include the cattle producers. And I've sent them copies of everything that we were looking at doing, but they just haven't been very active at providing comments.
Thank you.
Commissioner Kenney?
Thank you. And do I understand it right that the pot of money per producer is not unlimited? They can go on and on. They would have to choose up to a certain limit of whether they get compensated for a depredation or a weight loss, and at some point they're going to reach a limit.
Right. At this point, we put a $5,000 cap on how much they can get for compensation specifically.
And either way, whether it was a...
Or whatever.
So if a producer's losing animals and having weight loss, the more logical approach would be to get the depredation payment once they start, if they were stacking up, for instance. But they're probably, or could be also suffering some weight loss, but they may reach that limit anyway.
Right.
Okay.
Any other questions? Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. How did we come up with the 5,000 and 10,000 limits?
We have, in the livestock agreement right now, it has really four pieces. One is a checklist of the non-lethal measures that a livestock producer agrees to do. It talks about a Cotton Act permit. They can request one of those, if they fit the criteria for one, they could be issued one. It talks about the cost share that the department would provide to them to help them implement some of the proactive measures. And then the final piece is based on the changes that we're recommending in the WAC, it would give them priority for compensation, and outside of confirmed and probable compensation, we could use these other considerations, whether it's higher than normal losses, weight gain issues, pregnancy rates.
Yeah, I wasn't clear. I understand that. Why isn't it 2,000 or 20,000?
And then we knew that we had $50,000 was appropriated by the legislature. In addition, we had about $15,000 in federal money and $15,000 in donations. And so, so looking at how much money we had available, figuring that we were going to end up with enough money for about 10 contracts, that's how we came up with the $5,000 limitation. And as I've told the producers, we're fine if we don't end up with 10 agreements, we'd be fine with amending those contracts so that it could be a little higher than that if that was necessary. We also dedicated about $50,000, so it's $50,000 for compensation. We also set aside about $50,000 out of our Wolf Management Fund to pay for proactive measures, non-lethal measures. And so, again, we capped that at $5,000 so that we could come up with about 10 contracts.
So would we then adjust it every year depending upon how much money the legislature or the Fed gives us for...
We could certainly do that, again, thinking about how many contracts we'd like to have. You know, with eight wolf packs and probably three or four producers affected at least by each wolf pack, we want to make sure that we've got enough funds and contracts available for as many as we can.
Commissioner Jennings?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just following up on a line of questioning that Commissioner Keening raised. I'm looking at page 12, too, and it says no more than $10,000 to the commercial livestock owner per claim.
Right.
But I don't see anything that says one claim a year. So I can see a scenario where you have two cattle killed in August, file a claim, two cattle killed in September, file a claim, and then at the end of the season, when you pull your herd off, you realize you have a lot of weight loss and you file a claim.
would all those be considered one claim, or would those be separate claims because they're filed at different times of the year? I don't see a time frame associated with that.
What we've talked to producers about is just we would amend the claim, and so we would have one claim that continues to get amended as additional livestock are lost.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Thanks, Dave. Good job. Okay, that completes that item.